Good morning. You're listening to KBBI AM 890 Homer. It's the Coffee Table. I'm your host, Renee Gross. Today, we're talking about what's next for the Kenai Peninsula Borough. I'm joined by Assembly Member Willie Dunn. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Renee. It's great to be here.
And by phone, we are joined by Assembly Member Kelly Cooper. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having us today.
And let's just start real briefly with what's going on in Seward. Heavy rains caused flooding this week, prompting road closures, and Seward City Manager to declare an emergency declaration. As of this morning, the Alaska Department of Transportation said there is still water on Seward Highway from milepost 3 to milepost 5. The road is passable with care, but rain is forecast to continue. Can you just talk about what the borough is doing to address the flooding and the meeting today?
Sure. We have a special assembly meeting at 2 p.m. this afternoon that was called in order to do an emergency appropriation of funds to address at least the borough responsibilities down there. Of course, there's multi-jurisdictional issues, state, city. But the borough has a number of roads that are being impacted by the flooding in Seward, and so we will be meeting, and the mayor has requested, a $300,000 emergency appropriation that we will discuss this afternoon.
And I do want to say that the borough assembly meeting will be broadcast on KBBI and live streamed on the air for people to listen to. Let's go to the invocation. About a week ago, a state superior court judge ruled that the borough assembly's invocation policy was unconstitutional. The policy restricted invocations to recognized leaders that hold regular meetings in the borough. What is the judge requiring in terms of change?
Well, my understanding is that the policy that the assembly adopted a couple of years ago has been determined unconstitutional. So we will have to address that. And the fact that the invocations were limited to certain individuals, there was a list of approved religious associations that was created, and that has been determined to be not in line with our state constitution, the establishment clause of the state constitution. So had restricted, there were at least five individuals that I'm aware of that had applied to present an invocation to the assembly, and those applications were denied. Three of those folks were party to the lawsuit, and I have not heard a proposed solution just yet, but the mayor has told us that he's working with the legal department to come up with a fix to that so that we will come in line with the court ruling. So hopefully we can do that very quickly.
And Kelly, yeah, do you have thoughts about what you want to see changed?
Well, I would like to speak about that briefly. When this policy came before the assembly, there were several of us that tried to bring forth ordinances that would be a better fit for our borough. And my ordinance was to allow everyone to give a invocation if that's what our constituents wanted. And we didn't have the votes for that. The other step that could be an issue for us is the assembly does have the right to appeal that. And I've had constituents from the Central Peninsula that have contacted their representatives, and their representatives had said that they would like to appeal this ruling. And so I, of course, continue to stand saying that it's not appropriate, and I will not be supporting an appeal to the lawsuit, and I would like us to either not have an invocation at all or allow everyone to participate.
And do you have a preference between the two? Ideally, would you like to see no invocation or that it's, changed so everyone can participate?
My preference would be that we not do one at all. But when we were having this issue front and center, the constituents that I heard from said, no, it's really important to us. We want to continue, but we want to allow everyone to participate.
And Willie, what about you?
Well, I too submitted a number of proposals, both in the form of resolution and the form of ordinance, to address the situation, to come up with solutions. Those did not pass the assembly either. I don't think the invocations are necessary. Our policy is that the invocations are not for the public. They're strictly for the spiritual benefit of the assembly members. And I think assembly members can address their spiritual needs without an invocation at the beginning of the meeting. So I also am opposed to appealing this. It has cost tens and tens of thousands of dollars, still compiling exactly how much money of taxpayer money has been spent on defending this policy that was ruled unconstitutional. And appealing it would just continue to cost taxpayers even more money. So I am very opposed to appealing the court's decision. And we'll have to see where we go from there. But I've been trying to work on solutions for this for a couple of years, and finally we decided we'll see what the court rules, and they have spoken. And also, I have not heard from our attorney, but I believe that we may have to fix our policy. Even if we decide to appeal, I think we still need to follow the judge's ruling during that appeal process. So hopefully we won't appeal, but we need to come up with some fix to come in line with our state constitution. We've been operating under a policy that violates our constitution. That's unacceptable.
And as you both mentioned, this is possibly not the end of the road with this. You know, there may be an appeal. But, you know, while there is a change right now, do you see this having an impact on how residents view the borough assembly meetings?
Well, the biggest complaint I've heard is that why are we wasting money on this issue? There are many, many municipalities that can conduct business without prayer at the beginning of the meeting, and I think we should be able to do so also. The state legislature actually does have an invocation at the opening of their sessions, but that one is not restricted. That invocation is open to anybody, and talking with some of our state legislators, they often have some interesting creative people opening the session with a musical performance or poem or something other than a prayer from a religious leader, and particularly the line in our policy that requires it be from a member of an approved religious approved religious association. That just smacks in the face of our constitution, our freedoms, our freedom of religion.
And Kelly, what do you think? You know, again, this might change again, but for now, do you see this having an impact on how residents view borough assembly meetings?
Well, I think that it's frustrating for our residents for us to continue to focus on this when we have so many other issues to deal with. I would like to put this to bed once and for all. I believe that people can pray to their gods in church, in private. We have the opportunity to do it at during our meal before the regular meeting. I'm just frustrated that we've put so much time and energy into something that we should be focusing on the government of the borough.
And let's jump into talking more about some other issues that the borough assembly is working on. But first, I want to say that if our listening audience wants to join in on the conversation, we will welcome your thoughts, your comments, your questions. You can call KBBI at 907-235-7721, or you can email us at info@kbbi.org. Let's chat a little bit about Kachemak Silo School. On October 2nd, the borough residents voted down a ballot measure to help fund a new school in Kachemak Silo. The measure asked voters to spend $4.95 per $100,000 in assessed property value. A lot of people complained that the project was too expensive, but as both of you have said, legally the borough needs to provide a school. So where do you go from here? Kelly, do you want to start with that one?
Sure. First of all, I'd like to say that I'm grateful for the residents in the Southern Peninsula here. The bond issue did pass in the Homer area. and in the small communities throughout the borough. So I'm grateful that they understand the value of providing good schools for our small or remote schools. We will have to go into Plan B. The school district will be taking the lead on that and letting us know what they would like to see us accomplish with this. We also have to deal with the state statute that has that cookie cutter footprint for schools, regardless of whether they are remote or a small school, and I'd like to deal with that at the state legislature level to have them assist us in changing that so we can perhaps build a school that might be a little bit smaller and still serve the needs of our communities out there.
Mm-hmm. And really, you want to add to that?
Well, I agree 100% with Kelly, and it was disappointing that the bond failed. I do believe that it never would have been cheaper than now to pass that bond and to provide a school facility down there for the students, for the community, as required by law. State law requires that we provide schools, and if it's in a borough, the borough does have to share in that cost, and we had a great deal with the state putting up just a little over $10 million. But, you know, the voters have spoken, and we'll need to move on. So the voters denied the $5.5 million school bond. And I agree with Kelly also that, you know, the crux of the problem seems to be with the lack of flexibility with state rules and state requirements as far as providing facilities in remote areas. Some areas are more than remote than others. This Ketchmack Silo is defined by the state as a geographically isolated community without a road up to standards coming into the community. So, you know, those rules kicked in. We are working with our state legislators, and I agree that a fix to state laws and or rules are needed. And we do have the possibility of extending the $10 million grant, holding on to that for a little while longer. It could expire soon, but we will be working to see if we can hold on to that to help utilize that towards an alternate plan. But the kids... our kids throughout the borough deserve quality schools where they can be safe and have a positive learning environment. And, you know, Ketchmack Silo is not our only remote school. We have schools in Tyonek and Port Graham and Nanwalek, and we will be having to address some of those in the coming years as those school facilities are either becoming overcrowded or unacceptable. So this is an issue we will be facing over the next few years.
And specifically, can you talk about what it is in terms of school construction standards at the state level that you want to see changed?
Well, personally, I'd like to see some flexibility, perhaps the reducing the footprint required, the size, depending on the size of the community and or projected enrollment. I'd like to see some flexibility in working with the community for in-kind services provided by the community. There's lots of discussion that needs to happen, but we need to get that discussion going and work on the state rules.
And how reasonable is it to expect that the state will change its standards for school construction? I don't know if, Kelly, if you have some insight into that, or just, you know, if we have to wait and see.
Well, I don't really have any specific insight at this time, but when we, as we've gone through the selection process for Mr. Dunsey, congratulations on your re-election, Willie, we keep hearing people compare our cost per student to the Valley and to Fairbanks, and they say, how can you spend so many more dollars to educate per student? And I really hate to see us use that formula on a per student basis. Fairbanks and the Valley do not have any remote schools, so that's comparing apples to oranges. I just really believe that if we can work with our existing legislators and help them understand that the remote schools or the small school footprint, as Willie suggested, should be adjusted so we can provide good quality education, make that the focus, make the building safe. But there shouldn't be a footprint that is the same for a large metropolitan area like Anchorage that would apply to a small community like Ketchum-Xelo.
Would the Assembly consider putting a similar amount of money to the voters again? I know one school board member discussed in the future combining a bond for Ketchum-Xelo with other project bonds that might affect the rest of the peninsula. Is that something that the Assembly might see pursuing in the future?
Well, I think everything's on the table. I'm certainly happy to discuss those sort of options. And it's also obvious that the voters are reluctant to spend over a certain amount. But, you know, recently, in the past couple of years, we have had bonds approved. We had bonds approved for expanding the Homer Medical Center and for providing for new construction and ventilation in our hospital. So the voters, I don't think will, I trust the voters, and I don't believe they will just automatically vote against a bond proposal just to vote against it. I think that the voters will look at things carefully and weigh the options and make a good decision.
And in the meantime, is there anything that will help the condition of the school now, or the kids now? Kelly, do you have thoughts about that?
Well, I know that the school district is working with the community. They do have a lease with them on those buildings, and it's kind of a catch-22 because those folks, when they lease the buildings to the district, it was never intended to be a permanent solution. Those buildings are very old. We've had some severe weather and earthquakes, et cetera, that have affected the condition. So it's just a matter of the community and the school district coming to an agreement on how much maintenance will be done and how they'll keep those buildings safe while we try to come up with a solution.
Let's transition to talking about another contentious topic at times, gravel pits. There's been a lot of battles over gravel pits and material sites in the peninsula. Recently, there's been a few battles over proposed gravel pits in Anchor Point. Last January, the Borough Assembly made a work group to look at regulations on gravel pits. I'm wondering if we can sort of start there and talk about what inspired a kind of renewed look at regulations for gravel pits, if either of you want to take that.
Sure, I can start off there. The Anchor Point area is within District 9 that I represent, and I've had numerous conversations with residents and concerns about gravel pits. And in borough ordinance, they're referred to as material sites, but they're generally referred to by the public as gravel pits. But I remember hearing from the planning department probably a year and about a year ago, saying that it was time to update some of those ordinances that oversee how gravel pits are operated, and that this material site working group was established in January of this year to basically gather input from the public to discuss possible needed changes and present those to the Assembly. Originally, it was supposed to be a six-month process, but they decided to that they needed to continue on. So they took a hiatus for the summer, but they're meeting again. They met last week, and they'll be meeting through the fall. And at some point, I'm expecting the Assembly will receive some recommendations. And, you know, they're looking at a number of things that, in general, it's going to come back to the quality of life for homeowners near a gravel pit. But they're looking at reclamation, buffers, looking at the impacts of noise and dust on homeowners. The public safety is a big one. Impacts on the water table, roads that are associated with the gravel pits, and then issues that have to do with the operators too, like bonding and prior existing uses. All those things are being discussed and in a public format. The public's welcome to participate in that, and we don't have any recommendations yet, but I'm happy to see the material site working group working diligently to that. I wish we could have had some recommendations by last June, but that didn't happen, so we'll have to wait a few months longer to get some recommendations on how we want to change those rules and benefit the homeowners and not negatively affect the operators.
And what do you hope comes out of this working group meeting, Kelly?
Well, you know, I'd like to remind folks that when we live in rural areas, like a big portion of the assembly covers, whether it's a gravel pit or a cannabis business or some other kind of business or commercial group, we quite often don't realize that we can be proactive until after the activity has started. So, you know, on the gravel pit, for example, if they have less than 1 acre, it doesn't even require a permit. We have a opportunity for folks to protect what they consider their quality of life through local option zoning. And I always try to encourage our constituents to, if you have concerns about projects that may be coming down the road in the future, you should look at that option. Because quite often we want the freedom with no zoning in, which is why we live in a rural area. We want to be able to do what we want to do until our neighbor does something that we don't approve of. So I always encourage communities or neighborhoods to look at the local option zoning and be proactive in how they want to protect their quality of life and what kind of interference. You know, the other part of the gravel pits, no one wants one next door, but yet when we are looking at construction or road work or things of that matter, we want to keep costs as affordable as possible, and so we have to get the materials from somewhere. So it's a really fine line in trying to reach a balance in making construction, whether it's dirt projects or homes or commercial properties, to be able to get all those materials at an affordable rate, still provide the quality of life in our neighborhoods as we expect them to be. And quite often we find out when a project starts that we had other options, such as the local option zoning. So I really encourage people listening in, if you do not have local option zoning in your area and you have concerns about something like this that may occur in the future, take a look at that and see if that's going to be a better fit for your community before it happens next door and then you feel like your hands are tied.
Yeah, and you bring up an important point that I think the work group is working on in terms of, you know, balancing both business interests and resident interests. Willie, what do you hope comes out and what do you hope see from these from this working group?
Well, you know, like everything in our local government here, I think we need to come up with some sort of compromise. We need to provide for better safeguards for homeowners, perhaps, you know, better notice, but certainly, you know, adequate protections against noise and dust and public safety issues. I'm very... I would hope that we'd see some issues that, or excuse me, some solutions to deal with water table issues and impacts on water quality. It's a very complicated situation, a very complicated issue, and as I said, you know, they hoped to had had some recommendations in 6 months, but they couldn't pull that off. So we'll take a little bit longer. And it is an issue, contentious issue. We've got at least one lawsuit now in the Anchor Point case where a resident sued to invalidate the counter permit for a gravel pit. We've got a number of appeals, and those are very expensive lawsuits and appeals. You know, we have to hire a hearing officer. So anything we can do to help reduce those, I think, would be of benefit to the borough. And, you know, public education. As Kelly mentioned, we have a rules on the books that allow neighborhoods to form their own local option zones to keep the neighborhood values more in a rural residential type thing as opposed to commercial. So, if you are in a nice, peaceful neighborhood and you want to keep it that way, look into the local option zone. I'm happy to help folks investigate that, or they can also go to the planning department and see how they can do their own local option zoning for their neighborhoods.
I want to remind listeners that they can call in to ask questions of our two borough assembly members. The number is 907-235-7721, or you can email us at info@kbbi.org. Let's take a little break. We'll listen to some music, and when we come back, we'll talk about borough budget. Morning. You're listening to the Coffee Table on KBBI AM 890 Homer. Today we're talking about what's next with the Kenai Peninsula Borough. We have two Assembly members with us, Assembly Member Willie Dunn and Kelly Cooper. And if you have questions or comments, or if you want to join in on the conversation, we welcome your thoughts. You can call us at 907-235-7721, or you can email us at info@kbbi.org. Let's try to tackle the budget. So a lot of people are aware of the state's financial woes, but residents may not be as familiar with the financial state of the borough. I'm wondering if one of you can give us sort of an overview, a summary of where we're at, where our financial condition is in.
Well, that's a huge question, and we could spend hours, days, weeks on that, but just as a very quick overview, and I'll let Kelly give her viewpoint too, but we passed a budget for this past fiscal year, and I was not happy with some things, but I was pleased with other things. But basically, we passed a budget that would require deficit spending again, and that's something that I have some heartburn with. I don't think it's sustainable to continue spending down our reserves, and I think we need to balance the budget. So that's something we'll be working on. We'll probably start talking about that here in the next month or two, start working on the next fiscal year budget. You know, schools are the largest part of our budget, and every penny of borough sales tax dollars goes to schools, but that still does not provide enough for our school budget. We, and I'm using very rough numbers, but roughly collected $30 million in sales taxes last year in the borough. That all went to schools, and we still needed to come up with roughly another $20 million to fund our schools this past year. And our funding sources are becoming more and more limited, with state funding decreasing, federal funding decreasing. We're seeing a lot of cost shifting mandates from the state that are unfunded that we need to provide. And so our solution this past year was to raise the property tax mill rate. And I don't like doing that, but I voted in favor of a 0.2 increase from 4.5 mils to 4.7 mils to help offset our deficit spending this past year. So our budget document is hundreds and hundreds of pages and lots of details, but in a nutshell, we passed a budget that is going to require us to spend down our savings some this year, and we don't know exactly how much. We're talking in perhaps the $1 to $2 million range of reducing our savings this year.
And we did get a question from a listener, and I just want to let them know that I will get to that, but let's first just sort of finish our conversation on the budget. Kelly, do you want to add to what Willie said? And I'm also kind of curious if you have a sense of how big the budget deficit is right now.
Sure. So the budget process is really difficult. So when we talk about the deficit, you know, we expected to have a $4 million deficit in 18, and it really only ended up being, well, I don't want to say only as if it's okay, but it ended up being about $1.8 million. So we end up doing better than we expect that we will when we do our budget process. And so this year, you know, we expected, with our slight mill rate increase, to have a 2.9 deficit, but at the end of the year, I expect it to be in the 700,000 range. We forecast sales tax, and we forecast the property tax and payment in lieu of taxes, and so there's always a little bit of fluidity there, as well as the administration with changes that they make on their personnel and budgets. So I was frustrated that we weren't able to do a little bit better in coming in closer on what we estimated our budget to do and not deficit spend or plan for that. But here's what the borough faces. we start a budget process and we look at everything we need to do. And we rely on the budget approving a ballot initiative after the budget's been passed. And so then when it doesn't pass, we're working on a budget without real numbers because those issues didn't pass. So when we were going through the budget process, I had actually asked for a 0.7 mill rate increase, which would have brought us to no deficit spending. There wasn't support for that on the assembly, and we compromised with the 0.2, which brought us closer. But at some point, we have to understand that when we pass the budget, we have to pass it with numbers and a process that the borough assembly has the authority to do, rather than work on our budget and say, oh, we'll put this before the voters and they'll approve it. So as we continue forward, I'm hopeful we can find something that works for all of our residents and not rely on the hopes that something will pass after our budget is passed at the ballot box.
And there's been a lot of ideas over these, you know, just past few years of new sources of revenue for the borough. And a lot of these ideas have never really gotten off the ground. What options do you both see for revenue?
Well, you're right. There have been a lot of options discussed, some of which failed at the assembly level, others which failed at the ballot box. We've talked about bed taxes, we've talked about tobacco taxes, we've talked about increasing the sales tax cap from $500 to $1,000. We've talked about modifying the senior property tax exemption over a period of years, and none of those have been successful, and I agree with Kelly 100%. We can't pass a budget hoping that the voters will approve something at the ballot. I kind of facetiously call that faith-based budgeting, which I don't think is a valid way to operate a government. You know, we need to have a very rigorous budget process and we have an excellent finance department. Our finance department is an award-winning finance department, and they give us great numbers, but you know, we need to you know, not continue to spend down our savings, and we need to either you know, cut the budget or come up with new revenues. And you know, our mayor, current mayor, ran on a platform of cutting the budget, and you know, he got into office, and within a couple of months told the assembly, we're going to need to raise revenue. So you know, he realizes that you can only cut so far. I've often been in a minority position as far as proposing some of these things. I am opposed to taxing our food, so I don't think that, I will not support any increases in the food tax, the sales tax on food. Currently, we pay sales tax on food just during the summer months, and so I'll oppose that, increasing that beyond the 3 months, and I'd prefer to see no tax on food or residential rent at all. But you know, we've got to come up with some options, and the ones that have been discussed at the assembly and at the public level have failed so far.
And are there any ideas that are giving you hope, or that you think might work? Kelly, what do you think?
Well, the frustration that we deal with at the borough level is decisions that we make affect our local municipalities and our communities. And then we also are dealing with the state deficit and them trying to determine what will work for them. You know, there are legislators that have proposed a statewide sales tax. Well, then that handicaps the people at the borough level and the municipality level, because that's how they raise their funds. And so they may be looking at an income tax. So things that we tend to get in our silos and only look at our borough budget, but we have to understand that when we make decisions, we can affect what our local cities do, or we could be hurt by what the state does, because it all trickles down. You know, this year, as we were preparing for the budget process, we had all of the cities their councils and their city managers come together with the borough assembly and discuss ways in which we can raise revenue that would not affect them or may assist them in what they were trying to achieve. And it's been a great meeting, and I'm really hopeful that we can continue to do that. One of the solutions that I had brought forth was the 0.7 mil rate increase, and if we were able to get a half a cent sales tax increase, then we could have reverted that mill rate back. The assembly didn't approve that. They weren't supportive of it. We did have a local citizen do a citizen's initiative because all sales tax goes to school, as you know. That's a big part of our budget. And so when we don't raise enough sales tax, we take it out of our general fund to support the school district in their budget. And so that citizen initiative didn't pass, didn't get enough vote or signatures. I think they were about 300 signatures short to get it put on the ballot. So we just have to look at something that's going to be a good fit for the majority of our citizens and help them understand the cost of doing government with all the services we provide. When we do our budget, we hear people say, reduce government, cut the budget, cut the spending. You know, the administration, when they came in, they found that that was very difficult. As a matter of fact, the personnel budget for the borough is higher than it was last year when they had hoped to be able to cut. We have people that want good quality schools. They want great parent-teacher ratios or student ratios, and that requires additional money. We want people to have that call us and say, we want good roads, we want all of this infrastructure. And it's just a matter of helping people understand for us to provide that quality of life that they want on this borough. It doesn't come at no expense. We have to determine what revenue will work for the entire borough and go forward from there.
And you both have kind of hinted on your thoughts about this, but, you know, just to ask it more explicitly, are there any places to cut? Do you guys see any places where that's possible, or is that not an option?
Well, I think we have been cutting. The school district has cut something like $8 million over the past several years, and down to the point now where any further cuts would affect the pupil-teacher ratio. And I will not support laying off teachers or reducing our pupil-teacher ratio. I think it's that's an essential, and it's one of the best investments we have is educating our children. So I don't see much, if any, room there in the biggest part of our budget. And then we are tied to other costs. You know, personnel costs tend to continue rising for a number of factors, and that's going to be a very difficult one to cut. We've in the past couple of years, we've combined a couple of departments, and that has resulted in some savings. But, you know, when the mayor comes to us and says he can't seem to find room to reduce our spending significantly without negatively impacting the residents of the borough, I have to agree with him. And so as far as the revenue end of things, I still believe one of the least painful and easiest and best ways we could increase revenue is by raising the sales tax cap. That cap of $500 was put in place in 1964. In 2018 dollars, that would be over $3,000 right now. So, but we did put a measure on the ballot a year ago, or perhaps 2 years ago now, and that did fail at the ballot. So perhaps we could try that again, or educate voters a little bit better on the importance of that, but I believe that's probably one of our easiest, least painful ways to go is to raise that tax cap.
And Kelly, what about you? You definitely, you know, touched on it, but do you see cuts as a potential, or just, you know, revenue as the only way to go? What do you think?
I think that we have a pretty lean budget, and I encourage constituents to participate in that process. It takes us several months to get through that. I think our school district is pretty darn lean on their budget and their request from us. You know, we aren't able to do some of the maintenance we'd like to do or some capital projects, so that budget is lean as well. I think the administration did a great job in trying to reduce, you know, their supply budgets and make a better approach to the way we provide services. So I think we're pretty darn lean. We have things that come up, you know, for example, today with Seward, that's an emergency over there. We're going to be appropriating additional funds for those. And I can't see that we could ever say that we can't provide those types of services to our residents. I mean, they expect to have good roads, they expect to have good schools, and the thing that we have to remember is people think that we are continuing to grow government, and that's actually not the case. You know, our revenues decrease. Every year we have more seniors that are going off of the property tax rolls. We have one of the highest growing senior populations in the state. I completely support seniors. I understand that. But I think that we could have a balance on it being an income-based type of exemption or a stepped program that is a better fit. You know, we are all living much longer now. And so when these senior exemptions were put in place, it was a very different scenario for our elderly population. So I think we have to continue to look at ways that we can not have our revenues decreased that affect the services that we provide to our entire borough. We have young families that can barely make it. And I have as much value in the young families as I do our seniors. And we just have to come up with a compromise that's going to allow our revenue to remain consistent while we manage the budget in an appropriate manner. And our revenue does go down from those sources, the property tax rolls, and our payment in lieu of taxes, et cetera. So it's just a work in progress, and it's not an easy fix where you could just go through and say, let's cut that, because it's pretty lean.
And I do want to get to our question from a listener who submitted it over email. And they said, why can't kids from Ketchumak-Seelow be bused to McNeil Canyon School or Homer Schools?
Well, the quick answer is that they're considered geographically isolated by the state. The state rules say that the switchback trail that goes down from the top of East End Road down to the beach is not a drivable road for school transportation purposes. So, you know, people do drive up and down that road It's not a legal road. It's legally a trail, but even though people do drive vehicles up and down, the school buses could not go up and down that road legally.
And, you know, one more question about Ketchumak-Seelow schools. You know, I know some residents feel like, well, there's got to be a sort of cheaper option, but the borough looked at a lot of different options for Ketchumak-Seelow school, right? So how possible is it to make this that much cheaper when you've already explored other options? And if you want to kind of talked about, you know, what those options were. Kelly, do you want to take that one?
Sure. In the many years that we've been looking at this process, we did explore the option of putting a road in there where we could combine those schools out there. And the actual cost of the road and the maintenance of that road for the years going forward was more expensive than the actual project of the school. We even looked at a kind of like a tram to take the kids up to combine those schools, and the soils are just not stable. We have looked at every option we could possibly think of, and some folks, when we were having a discussion about this bond issue, said, well, have them do homeschool. Well, we can't mandate that students in small communities not have a brick-and-mortar building. You know, there's a, I think it's like 7 students or something before or a school is no longer required, and a school board member could correct me on the number of students required. But we've looked at every option possible, and we've even had folks say, well, you know, it shouldn't cost that much to build that school. Just hire people to come in and do that. And when it's a state project in a school, the Davis-Bacon requirements come in, too, as far as the contractor and wages for that. So we've looked at every possible solution, and I still believe that those kids deserve a quality school. You know, just like McNeil Canyon and the other communities, when McNeil was being built, people didn't think there was a need for that school that far rural and that those kids should be bused into town. And it's a thriving, award-winning school, and I just continue to support a school in that community.
Well, we just have a couple minutes left, and before we go, I want to ask you guys what you're looking forward to tackling this year. Willie, you want to start?
Well, there's so many things to be looking forward to, and I'm happy to be reelected and serve another 3 years, and looking forward to doing that to represent the people of District 9. Thank you for your trust and support there. You know, there's so many things to look at. One area that I have committed to pursuing is. There's a state law called Commercial Property Assessment and Energy Efficiency Program. It's a way that businesses can do energy upgrades. First, the municipality has to adopt a program. It was a state law that was passed, and I want to work with the administration on adapting CPACE rules for the Kenai Peninsula Borough, and it would. You know, save businesses money, it would save energy, and it would allow businesses to upgrade energy in their existing buildings. So I don't want to go into minute details of that, but I hope to work with the administration on enacting these energy, or adopting rules for the Kenai Peninsula Borough. And the other area that I'm really excited to work with is our, with our local hospital. We have a fantastic facility here. It's grown over the years, and it serves our community well. The one deficit that I see there is in addiction services, and we all know about the opioid addiction crisis, and we many of us are aware of the other addiction issues that our residents face, and families, so many families are touched by that, and I've been impressed by the Central Peninsula Hospital. They have a very well-coordinated addiction services all the way from emergency room to detox to extended inpatient treatment and on into traditional housing, and that's something that is lacking in the Southern Peninsula, and I would encourage our hospital to work in that direction.
And Kelly, what about you?
I am looking forward to us bringing civility back into all levels of government. It's been a frustrating campaign cycle as I've watched and supported candidates. So I'm looking, and we struggle with that at the assembly level as well. You know, we have people from very different beliefs in what government should be, and we have become a country that decides if we don't agree with someone, we can be rude and stomp on them and not come together as a community. And so my goal is to continue to be fiscally responsible and provide all the services that our borough wants and needs, keep costs down as low as we possibly can, and involve the constituents as much as they choose to while working with the state governments and the municipalities.
Well, I want to thank you both so much for joining us today on the coffee table. Assemblymember Willie Dunn and Assemblymember Kelly Cooper. Really interesting conversation. Thank you so much, and thank you to our listening audience for tuning in. You're listening to KBBI AM 890 Homer.